And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show at 203-333-9422. This is an opportunity for you to call in during this part of the show and ask any questions you may have. Joining us is Dr. Jaime Salas Rushford, who was traditionally trained. He did some of his training, in fact, at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. He practices regenerative and functional medicine and is currently on the front lines of the outbreak of coronavirus in Puerto Rico, where they are taking a self-quarantine seriously. If they are found in Puerto Rico outside their home for unapproved reasons, they currently face a $5,000 fine in jail time. And so we're going to talk with Dr. Salas right now. He is giving us some of his time. He completed his medical training at St. Vincent's Hospital and Mount Sinai Medical Center. He practices medicine in New York City, Florida, as well as Puerto Rico, and is a published author. And we appreciate him giving us some of his time right now. Our telephone number for you to call is 203-333-9422. If you've got questions about COVID-19, if I'm not asking the questions that are on your mind. Dr. Salas Rushford, hello. Welcome to the show today. How are you?
Pretty good. Good morning. Thank you for having me. And before anything, I want to thank your previous guest of the noble cause of bringing food to the first responders. She's doing it with that's, I have to say thank you to her before anything else.
Yes, that's my wonderful sister.
So, I've been through earthquakes in Haiti, hurricanes in Puerto Rico, earthquakes in Puerto Rico, now this. And believe me, that makes a big difference. That is great. So,
well, that's
thank
good
you for
to
having
know.
Me here.
Sure, it's a pleasure. Are we speaking to you right now in Puerto Rico? Is that where you are?
I was in New York, actually, December, January, beginning of February. Now I'm in Puerto Rico. So I just happened to be here, and we got locked down. So I got locked down in my office in Puerto Rico with the decision for the governor to lock down the island and hopefully start building, the what we call the war zone, like they did in New York and Puerto Rico. We're getting more cases every day. So there's also a lot of needs of doctors in Puerto Rico. So I stay here and see how we can fight it off and obviously get a provider help. What's going on.
Doctor, do you have the N95 mask and protective equipment that you need for your staff?
Actually, I'm working with me and a nurse. That's it in my office. We don't have enough equipment to be able to spread it out with so many people. So we're downsizing me and my colleagues down here to just open for emergencies and what is needed. But it's very hard to get them, actually. You can get two or three. But, to get a decent amount of quantity of equipment to actually be able to be effective, it's becoming kind of hard.
So, and one of the things that we keep hearing about, maybe it's wishful. Can you help us, Dr. Salas Rushford, in your opinion? We hear about flus having certain seasons. We hear about this disease that is eradicated with certain heat. But Puerto Rico is a tropical climate. It is a warm place.
And
yet there
it.
Are,
yes.
And that you have it. So it's yes. not really true that this disease doesn't exist in the heat, is it?
Well, the truth about COVID is nobody really knows long-term what it is, right? Now we know people that recover can have serious lung disease, even though they recovered. So we're learning so many things as they go by, but we haven't seen that it has a seasonal pattern. What do we know is that people need to treat their symptoms right when they start. And it's something people are not doing that I'm seeing here. I'm seeing from my colleagues in New York. There's a lot of things that we can do, even on top of things that we don't know, right? The virus lives inside of us. So as long as we have contact with each other, the virus can jump from a host that is sick to a host that is healthy and keep alive in that healthy, infected host, right? Our temperature is almost 98 degrees Fahrenheit inside. So the virus does live in that warm temperature. And this social distancing needs to be taken seriously. But what do you do when you actually feel symptoms in your home by yourself or home with your parents or home with anybody? And those symptoms need to be addressed. And, again, that's one of the most proactive things besides social distancing and just staying home, identify symptoms and treating immediately. You have a fever, just treat it immediately.
So, okay, and you want us to treat it with Tylenol, not Advil or ibuprofen, correct?
Well, there's so many studies now saying one or the other side. If you have a fever and you're sweating at that moment, the only thing you have is, you know, something other than Tylenol, just take it until you get something else. Because what happens when you, who's being affected mostly with the virus, right? If people are older, although we're having young people getting infected because they're not treating their symptoms and they're taking this very lightly. And I'm seeing this from my colleagues in New York and here in Puerto Rico. But you have people with chronic conditions, and if all they have is something other than Tylenol, take it right away, because what's going on is the fever can actually create havoc in your system. And by the time you get to me or another colleague or healthcare professional, you know, you're going to be weaker and sicker, and it's going to be harder for us to actually help you out.
So what I'm hearing, we're chatting with Dr. Jaime Salas, 233-9422. What I'm hearing is if ibuprofen's the only thing you have on hand and you have a fever, take it. It's better than nothing. But if you have a choice, take Tylenol. Is that right?
Correct, yes. Or take the multi-symptom Tylenol or the equivalent. You know, doesn't have to be, can be the generic. But what I'm telling my patients, right, and I'm, you know, even though Puerto Rico is lacking testing, this is something you can clinically diagnose. I have patients that are negative for the flu and they have fever, mm-hmm, cough, and, you know, and shortness of breath, just nothing left. So right, even though they didn't get the test, I have to be a clinician and say, look, you have this, you know, and we have to go through the whole thing, stay in a different room, have you on your utensils, quarantine yourself inside your own home, right? But what I'm telling patients is that you need good hydration, you know, things like Pedialyte, like electrolyte solutions. As soon as you get, mm-hmm, a little fever, start hydrating. Get Tylenol or the equivalent, cold and flu. There's so many brands out there, but have something available. Robitussin, because you have cough and congestion. Get all that gunk out as soon as you get it. One of the things I've been noticing is a lot of people who were not asthmatic are getting asthma all of a sudden. I'm getting, you know, we're doing telemedicine. I'm going to people's homes. I'm trying to do my best to try to go to them versus coming to me. And I have people that have never had a history of asthma are just locked down. They cannot breathe. And I have to go, you know, to local pharmacy, get a little machine and try to find the little solutions.
Oh boy.
So the most important thing is once you have a symptom, notify somebody and treat it. Most of them you can treat at home. And that's going to really help us help you better.
It's interesting about the asthma. So we're talking with Dr. Salas Rushford at 203-333-9422. So I have had asthma for many, many years, and I have all these prescriptions. Every doctor that sees me when I breathe, they go, oh, you've got asthma. But I, long time ago, decided that I would treat it with acupuncture because I'm more comfortable doing that. And it's been manageable in the sense that I don't feel, generally speaking, like I have shortness of breath most of the time. So since I don't feel it, I don't worry about it. I have acupressure points that Dr. Ho taught me between my thumb and forefinger in the fleshy part of my hand, hard, and I can feel my lung open up immediately when I have shortness of breath. But, you know, Dr. Salas Rushford, it's very interesting because ever since this COVID-19 thing is happening, I'm having a lot more shortness of breath myself. And I wonder if it isn't to some extent anxiety driven. In other words, it's real, but is it coming from my head as opposed to my lungs?
Well, the sad thing is that right now, treating people by telemedicine and going in at a limited distance, right? You're not as into everybody as you can because you have limited equipment, right? There's no way to know. So
there's no way to know.
The asthma medication, especially nebulizers, have a two-prong effect. One, you're right, it's still medication, but the other part is also humid. So it can actually help loosen all that mucus that you might have dry in that actually helps you get it out. So even saline treatments, or you have little shortness of breath, I'm giving my patients, like if they're asthmatics, and I'm noticing they're recovering quicker. I don't want to, make a mistake in the fact that it might be anxiety versus a real bronchospasm. So I'm treating right away every symptom as if it was COVID-19 right now.
Okay. And when you say a saline treatment, you mean gargle with salt water? What do you mean?
No, the those asthmatics that are listening to me, they know this. It, when you put the nebulizer in, you can either put medication in or you can mix it with saline that they sell for the machine. So actually, it's a saline infusion that you breathe in, and it moistens everything that you have. You know, one of the things that is very interesting, a lot of people come in and they're very dehydrated. The first thing I ask my patients if they're getting sick or fever, when was the last time you went to the bathroom to void? I don't remember. Oh, how often do you void during the day? Oh, many times. So mostly they're dehydrated, okay? And all the mucus in your lungs is also dehydrated. So you're getting all this mucus in very hard, and it's hard to get out, but you don't feel anything until it's too late. So hydration with electrolyte solutions actually loosens all that up. And also, with the nebulizer, it helps you get more moistness and breaks a lot of that congestion out. Remember, there's things you cannot control with coronavirus. There's things you can, right? So right now is getting priority for the things you can control. What you can control is what's going to help you more, right? 99% of things you can control. If you're hypertensive, take your hypertensive medication. If you're diabetic and are with uncontrolled sugar, call your doctor. He can call in a better medication. He can up your medication. You can actually start for once following the diet, right? The doctors prescribe you. Most of the time they go in, I'm medicated for this and I can eat whatever I want. Now is the time to actually pay attention to that. If you're asthmatic, just get all the treatments. You know, that pump that you have that never used and you're getting a little something, get it under control. You know, if you never took vitamins or never took anything, now is the time to actually, you know, think about getting yourself with your vitamin B's, your D's, your E's, supplements like HCC and selenium and zinc. You know, everybody's promising this cure online, which I tell patients there's no cure for this. There's treatment. You have to try to get everything that you can control right. And again, there's so many things you can do to your body to make it stronger. So when and if you get the virus, you can actually fight it off better. Because at the end of the day, everybody who got recovered or recovered from the disease is because they had a good enough immune system to actually fight the virus off. Because people are recovering. You know, you have a million infected. What is 600,000 now? I know in Puerto Rico, they're like 170. I'm not quite sure the whole figure in the entire world. I think it's 600,000. But not all of them are passing away. A lot of them are recovering. So that means that, you know, our bodies can fight it, but we have to get our bodies enough of a chance to put in a fight, if you know what I mean.
So right now, while we're not sick, what is the recipe of, you mentioned selenium, you mentioned zinc, you mentioned vitamin C, you want us taking a one-a-day multivitamin. Talk to us about a recipe that you feel, Dr. Salas Rushford, builds us up.
Well, you know, there are different. What I want to tell people first is if they're going to look online, go to reputable websites like the vitamindsociety.org, hcc.net. You know, there are different American Health, the American Medical Association. They're actually healthcare professionals are providing advice of what nutrients to take and some contraindications that you shouldn't be taking one or the other when you have certain diseases such as certain medications. So try to stay with reputable places online if you're going to go online, because now people have all the time in the world to look for every single miracle cure. So try to stay to reputable places and actually follow their instructions. You know, and they're very good scientific articles that people can understand. And now will be the time to say, look, this is what I have done with my life. I'm a bit overweight. Let me just cut down on the calories. I have, again, hypertension. And I, you know, if you don't have a blood pressure machine, if you can actually go out and get one from the pharmacy, get it once you're picking up your medication, see how you are. Now, you remember, doctors, now we need to take care of the front lines and treat emergencies. All these things, 99% of the people know the instructions, know what to do. Just they didn't do anything for so many months or weeks, or they just did it on an on and off basis, mostly asthmatic. I go back to the asthma. I'm getting so many asthmatics that have the pump and never used it. It's like, but I prescribed it to you, sir. Yes, but I didn't feel it was, I needed it. Okay, now you're wheezing.
I'm
and
one
you're
of those
short of breath. And it's one of those things that you tell your patient, look, there's a reason I gave it to you a few months ago, because I noticed that you were having difficulty breathing because of asthma. And this is something you need to use every day. You know, other people that ran out of medications, actually fill them up and take them. Some people are staying home and saying, look, I'm not going to go out for fear. You know, honestly, stay home. But if you need medication, call the pharmacy. They deliver in Puerto Rico. Yes. I am going to pharmacies and taking my medication, taking it to my sickest patients.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So we all have to pitch together in a way to help. It's what it is, right? We have to save lives and we have to educate. I think those are the two main goals right now. And you are helping with the education part with having us online and everything. But, you know, people need to listen to just good information, look for it. And also we have to take care of the sick. There are people getting sicker and sicker every day.
I know. Dr. Jaime Salas-Rushford, you take care of yourself from Puerto Rico. And feel free to come back on the show. Maybe we'll have you on in a couple weeks or sooner. You'll let us know what's happening. A lot of people in our community care very much about what's happening in Puerto Rico. They have relatives there. They have family. They have friends. And, you know, there's a very close tie between a lot of our people.
Everybody's taking things here seriously. Everybody's taking care seriously. So, you know. Thank God everything is working until now. The governor extended the curfew. So, you know, everybody needs to pitch in. Please, to all your audience, help yourselves in a way that helps us help you better, okay?
Okay.
And my respect to all my colleagues in the frontline, nurses, EMTs, doctors, that I know are putting their lives at risk. And I know a lot of them. I studied with them and trained with them in New York City. And, you know, they're having a hard time. So I do appreciate all the prayers and everything that people are telling them. It really helps, believe me. It really helps. So thank you for your show and having us here.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jaime Salas-Rushford. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to go to a couple of messages. We appreciate the continued sponsorship of our advertisers. 203-333-9422. It's the Lisa Wexler Show, and we'll be right back. And welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show. We're going to be on with you live till 12:30, and then Mayor Joe Ganim is going to come on at 12:30, where I anticipate he'll be talking about retrofitting the Webster Arena as a possibility for overflow. A good news spot is that if you look at what's happening in Seattle and Washington State, they got a handle on this. They acted very early, despite the fact that our president called the governor Jay Inslee a snake. They took a very radical, strong approach to trying to contain the virus when it broke out and swept through that nursing home in Kirkwood. And it looks like they are doing much better than the rest of the country right now. They don't want to be taking this for granted. They are reluctant to let things go back to normal, particularly when the rest of the country in a rolling way is first getting its peak in other places. But they are tentatively, with fingers crossed, showing data that is actually showing that they appear to have substantially reduced the amount of people that are contagious to someone else. So this coronavirus, on average, most people give it to 2.4 people. They're showing in Washington State, they think because of all the physical distancing, that they're down to 1.4. And they have far fewer newer cases than the trajectory would have indicated had they not done what they are doing. So in the rest of the United States of America, we can look to Washington State and we can say, oh, I guess it's working. And that's really what it's about, right? Oh, I guess it's working. Because the truth of the matter is that all of us can't wait to get back to life as normal. And we're not going to be able to do that unless we see this epidemic cresting and falling and falling and falling in a way that makes us feel physically and emotionally secure. 203-333-9422. I'm opening up the phones for you. This is our time to kibitz. 203-333-9422. Just to give you a recap of what we learned today, Jill Zarin was on earlier in the show, and she has a GoFundMe page, and you can find that, Nauseous for Nurses. If you can't find that, if you're not that savvy, but you can email, my sister at jill@jillzarin.com, Z-A-R-I-N. And she will direct you to where you need to go. We also learned from a doctor that he is recommending we prophylactically take our vitamin C, take our zinc, keep ourselves strong, and mostly hydrate. Keep hydrating ourselves and treat any symptom early. Whether it be a headache or a fever or a cough, he says take your Robitussin, take your Tylenol, keep yourself hydrated. Take your steam, de-schnotify yourself. He didn't say that. Those are my words. Because he wants you to be keeping your body strong, remembering that the vast majority of people who get COVID-19 do recover. And they recover because their immune system can handle this. He wants us to keep our immune system strong. We're joined now by Representative Jim Himes, representing our entire district here in Fairfield County, and a resident of Greenwich in Cascade. Hello, Jim. Hello, Congressman. Welcome to the show today. Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
Is everybody well where you are?
Everybody's well, fortunately. Yeah, we're hunkered down like we're supposed to be, and so far so good. Two teenage daughters in the house could be combustible, but so far everybody's enjoying each other's company.
Well, that's good. That's good. So, Congressman, boy, oh boy, I'd like to pick at that brain just a little bit. I want to know, what are your racing thoughts tonight?
Well, you know, obviously, you said it just right. This is a very serious illness, and we're seeing, particularly here in Fairfield County, we've got something like two-thirds of the cases and two-thirds of the fatality in the state of Connecticut. We're seeing just how lethal it can be. But, you know, we're also starting to see some of the positive effects of the measures that we're taking. You know, it looks like certainly in Asia and maybe even in Washington, you know, as people stop hanging out with each other in grocery stores and restaurants and bars, it has an effect. And so I'm just really hoping that in the coming days and certainly weeks, we begin to see a decrease in the number of new cases, because I think it would really help a lot of people to have a better sense than we do today about, you know, how long we're going to have to take these extraordinary measures. So I'm hoping that those hints of good news that we see in communities that have really self-isolated and been disciplined about it, I hope that is kind of maybe a distant anyway light at the end of the tunnel.
Let me ask you something, Representative Jim Himes. I don't really have an answer. I really want to pick your brain on this because I've been muddling it around and people keep calling me about what I think about it. And, you know, I'm a lawyer and a constitutional person. What do you think about what Gina Raimondi did in terms of trying to seal off and having police go door to door in Newport looking for New York plates? And what do you think about our very close border? You live literally on the border, Greenwich, the border of New York. What do you think about restricting New Yorkers to New York and Connecticut to Connecticut? What do you think about all of this?
Well, so let me say two things which I think are maybe sound a little contradictory. But number one, unless you have an absolutely essential reason to go to New York or to go to Pennsylvania or to go to Rhode Island, you shouldn't do it. These are the orders of the governor, and they're quite apart from that. They're just what you shouldn't do. No, you shouldn't go see Aunt Sally up in Rhode Island. You put yourself and you put her at risk. So, no, people shouldn't be taking discretionary, non-essential trips anywhere out of their house, much less across state lines. That said, closing state borders is just not a good idea. Why? Number one, this virus is everywhere. And so it's not like you're going to keep it out of Rhode Island or out of Connecticut by stopping people at the border. Number two, when you say you're going to do that the way the president did, that panics people. So now all of a sudden, if there's some risk that, you know, you're in New York City or in Fairfield County and you may not be able to leave the state, a group of people, some people, jump in their cars and drive to their homes in Vermont or their cousins' homes in Pennsylvania, and now you've actually contributed to the spread of this thing, right? And so, you know, I like Gina. She's very smart. She's actually a personal friend of mine, but I think that was the wrong move. And I think the president, even though he panicked a lot of people, and that was probably not a good idea, backing off this notion of trying to put, you know, barriers up on state lines was the right decision. And by the way, it was made because everybody around the president who understands this stuff said, Mr. President, not a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea myself. And I think you're right. We have to heed the advice to just stay in place. But to create borders between states is alarmist. It strikes the fear in many people. I didn't like the door-to-door police knocking on your door. Where are you from? Show me your papers. I'm sorry, Jim Himes. I don't like that.
Yeah, you know, and the fact is actually, you know, it's not clear that the states have the authority. So in Rhode Island, and we don't need to spend a lot more time on this because Gina Raimondo, rescinded that. But, you know, they can ask you where they're from, and they can recommend that you quarantine. But you can't legally stop somebody from crossing a state border. So anyway, hey, okay. You know, I'd love, Lisa, before we say goodbye, we haven't chatted since that crazy run I made down to D.C. to be in the chamber to make sure that the the CARES bill passed. You know, there's three or four things that I'm getting a lot of questions about that are money in people's pockets. And yep. I'd love to talk a little bit about those.
That was what I was going to go to next. I want to hear all of it. And I'm getting a lot of calls about how to file and unemployment and self-employed. So tell us what you know.
Yeah, okay. So let's just do a couple minutes on this, and then we can explore whichever area you're getting more questions in. First off, the $1,200 in direct payments. Here's my advice. If you make as an individual under $75,000 a year, or if you file jointly and you and your spouse make less than $150,000 a year, you're going to get $1,200 in direct payments. Plus, if you've got children in your household, you'll get $500 per dependent child. So if you do the math there, again, if you've got a couple, both of whom are making under $75,000, and you got two kids, just to pick an example, that household could get a $3,400 check, and that is a lot of help if you're struggling, right? Now, the way it's going to happen, Lisa, is it's going to happen based on the address and the direct deposit information you filed with the IRS. So it's going to either be, if you filed 2019, it'll be based on that information. If you filed if you didn't, it'll be based on 2018 filing. So it's a good idea to make sure the IRS, if you didn't file 2018, or if you're not a filer, because there actually are some people out there who are not a filer, good idea to get hold of the IRS and tell them, your bank account information and where they should send that money. Above $75,000, Lisa, the credit begins to decline, to the point where an individual making in excess of $99,000 a year would actually not see any element of that credit. The other thing I want to put right up front, and then if you want, we can talk about our churches, our nonprofits, our small businesses, but unemployment insurance has been dramatically increased, an additional $600 a week of unemployment insurance for those many, many people who have been laid off. And so in the state of Connecticut, that means unemployment insurance is going to be $1,250 a week. Again, that's very real money, right? And the other good news about unemployment insurance in here, I'm about to get on a call with Hartford because this is new and it could conceivably take some time to roll out. But people who work for themselves, independent contractors, gig economy workers, that Uber or Lyft driver, that person who does TaskRabbit work, they will qualify for unemployment insurance. So I wanted to highlight those two things because that's really where the dollars in the pocket action is for a lot of people who are going to be struggling.
Oh, yeah. I have a very dear friend who's a self-employed hairdresser. She was literally ordered to go out of business in one day. She is finally going to get some relief.
Yep. This is really important stuff. And what people can do is they can make sure if they weren't, it's going to, I think we're talking about, maybe 2-3 weeks tops for people to get that $1,200 per individual. Assuming they filed a tax return at least in 18 and I'd encourage people to do direct deposit because it takes a lot longer for the a physical check to hit a mailbox than it does for direct deposit to happen.
So one of the things, Congressman Himes, that we got a couple of calls about were for people that were not required to file because their income threshold was too poor and they obviously need the money. How do they, and assume, let's assume they're not terribly computer literate. What do you advise them to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll say two things about that. Number one, it is almost always worth filing a tax return because there's something called the earned income tax credit, right? And we leave a ton of, or I say we, but our community leaves a ton of money on the table because people who don't make a lot of money that aren't necessarily required to follow a return don't get that earned income tax credit. So if you haven't filed a return, nothing to be lost by doing it. There's volunteer, there's volunteer help out there to actually get that done. But the second and more important thing If someone doesn't have a record with the IRS, we're going to go to the Social Security Administration system. And they, of course, have records of people who are receiving regular Social Security or Social Security disability, and they're going to use those records. Now, this is a new thing, right? So, you know, it may take a little while to get that system up and running. But people who have not filed a tax return but have some interaction with the Social Security Administration, that's going to be the route through which they get their check. And retired people, even if they have, you know, no income other than Social Security, anybody with a Social Security number qualifies for that $1,200, assuming they're making under $75,000 a year.
So one caller called and said that she didn't get Social Security. I don't know that she got disability or not. She was just, frankly, like a working poor person, of which there are many, many of those as well. So for her, your advice, number one, is to see if someone can help her file a return for 2018. It's not too late. She could certainly do that. And in lieu of that, if she just wants to call to find out how to get the $1,200, does she stay on the phone forever with the IRS? What does she do?
Yeah. What I'm hoping, and remember, this just became law 72 hours ago, so there's a lot of work to be done to, you know, get websites updated and stuff. What I'm hoping for those relatively few individuals who have had no, you know, have never paid taxes, filed a return, or who haven't interacted with the Social Security Administration, I think that's going to be a pretty small group of people, because if you've ever held a job that wasn't under the table, you would, you know, there'd be a record of your payments in the Social Security Administration. But my hope is that the Social Security Administration is going to be your go-to for that. So I can't say that 100% sure. We'll know in the next couple of days. But there is going to be a mechanism for somebody who has never filed a tax return to get that $1,200 check. That's typically the person who's going to need it the most, as you know, Lisa.
Right. Let's go to John from Bridgeport, who has a question from you. You're on the air with Congressman Jim Himes. John, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. As a property owner in Bridgeport, what's going on with our property taxes, since it seems like 90% of city workers are staying home? And are they also going to be living on unemployment, or are they going to continue to get paid their full salary while they sit at home?
Well, thanks for the question, John. I can answer a couple pieces of it. Anybody who is receiving their full salary will not qualify for unemployment. There is a provision if people have had their hours scaled back dramatically. If somebody's an hourly worker and those hours have been cut in half, there is a provision to use unemployment to make up for some of that.
That's not the question I'm asking, John. I'm sorry. I'm asking, as city and state officials are staying home making six-figure salaries, are they still going to be paid their six-figure salaries while they sit at home and don't do anything? I mean, we're all in this together, right? I mean, we're property owners. We're paying these property taxes, and I'm just trying to figure out, you know, if people are staying at home and they're not working, I mean, we're all in this together, so we should all be on unemployment, correct?
Well, John, you're asking me a question about the policy of the city of Bridgeport. You know, I'm a federal representative, so I neither have any jurisdiction over how the city of Bridgeport handles its employees. So I can't answer your question. You asked about taxes, though. There is one other statement you made that I can help you address. You asked about property taxes. Again, that'll be a decision by the city of Bridgeport if they want to give people a little bit of room, a little bit of time to pay their property taxes. One thing I can tell you for sure, again, because it's under my jurisdiction at the federal level, is that federal income taxes do not need to be filed on April 15th. We have extended the period of time by law to July in which you file your federal income tax. So that does two things. One, it lifts the hassle of filling out your 1040, but it also means your payment, if there is a payment due, will not need to be paid on April 15th. It can go into July. But with respect to the individual policies of the city of Bridgeport, I would check in with the city itself.
Thank you. By the way, Congressman Himes, I'm glad that you brought that up about July 15th, because I wondered if the federal government was going to be charging interest on monies typically due by April 15th through July, even if you had time to file through July.
It will not, Lisa. There will be no penalties and no interest for people who take advantage of the ability to put off their filing until July.
Good. All right. And then there's one other thing I just wanted to address with you. There are so many ways we can go, and we so appreciate your time. I saw today a big article that we can all expect our health care premiums after this to go up even more, which I can't even imagine them going up even more because they choke most people right now. And, as a leader, I just want to have this conversation with you and advocate that I think the healthcare insurance companies have been abysmal. This is an opinion, my own opinion. I don't see them throwing in the way utility companies are, the way banks are, the way the federal government is, and saying, you know what, we're going to give people a break for a few months and waive premiums, or if you're unemployed, cover you anyway without COBRA. I just don't see them being part of the solution in any way. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on this, because I think unless they really pony up, there's going to be a real problem with systemically having all of these for-profit health insurance companies. Just want to say
that. I'm glad you brought that up, Lisa. And I'm with you. I've seen I was on a phone call 3 days ago with the Connecticut Bankers Association, and these are the smaller banks in our communities, the Webster Bank, the Patriot Banks, all those smaller banks, Fairfield County Bank. They are really stepping up, I hope. I mean, I can't say that across the board, but certainly the ones I talk to, are providing people with a lot of flexibility on paying their mortgages. Across the economy, we see that happening either. It's because it's required, because, of course, now there's prohibitions on evictions, that kind of thing, prohibitions on foreclosures. And we actually see our companies stepping up. Walmart, which doesn't have paid sick leave, and, sometimes my party in particular likes to beat up on Walmart, they voluntarily put in place 2 weeks of paid medical leave for a lot of their employees. So everywhere, you're absolutely right, everywhere we look, people are stepping up. I actually haven't looked to see whether the health insurance companies have done similarly, and I couldn't agree with you more, particularly since we're dealing with something that, it's an economic emergency, but it's driven by a health emergency.
Yes.
To me, it seems inconceivable that if somebody couldn't pay their health care premiums, that they might get booted off their health insurance plan at this time. But I'll do a little bit of digging and find out what's going on there.
All right, I've got one more question for you, and then we won't keep you further because we're going to go to Mayor Joe Ganim with a live press conference. Mike from Fairfield, you're on the air with Congressman Jim Himes.
Hey, Congressman Himes, how are you? Quick question. I have my wife is only 57, has MS, and she's in a senior living facility. Unfortunately, very young to be somewhere like that, but it's been 3 weeks today since they put, where people can't go in to see their loved ones, which I completely understand. Is there anything, when this ends, who makes the decision that people are allowed to go back into the facility to see their loved ones, such as my wife and so forth?
This is a very big question, Mike, because I'm very worried about all of these facilities now that don't have people visiting their loved ones, not only for the loved ones, but generally speaking, looking out for the way things are being done. It's the cynic in me, but I can't help myself. Representative Jim Himes, what do you have to say to that?
Yeah, Mike, you're highlighting one of the most heartbreaking aspects of this crisis we're in right now. Just, in the moment when your friends and family are most scared and, they get sent to a hospital, they're in a senior living facility, now's the moment where we can't actually be physically present with them. And, we humans are not configured to not comfort each other that way. And it's going to lead to some really scary depression and feelings of loneliness and isolation. I can answer your question. I'm not sure I can solve that problem because, as you point out, Mike, you see what happened in that retirement home in Washington. These measures are absolutely necessary to keep
Definitely.
People safe, but they're brutal. So I have two thoughts for you. One, I'm sure you're thinking about this, but I hope that the facility that your wife is in is doing everything they can to facilitate
They're wonderful. They're
FaceTimes, and you know, I have an elderly mom. I'm spend a lot of time on FaceTime with her. But the actual answer to your question is, it will be some combination. It is likely to be the governor who will give the all clear on this. So I would watch that space. It's not going to be the federal government telling. I mean, obviously the people at CDC and the folks that you see on TV will advise the state authorities, but it will be the state authorities in concert with those facilities who say, okay, we're at a point in the recovery right now where people can visit again.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, Congressman Himes. We very much appreciate that. There's a little bit of news right off of the I'm ripping it off of the news. It says that Yale epidemiologist Ted Cohen has put together a tool and shows that here in Connecticut, the R-naught, which is the rate, I guess, of contagion, shows that in Connecticut, it's 2.971. In other words, for every one person infected with coronavirus, approximately three people will catch the disease. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, and it's important, though, that people understand it. I'm far from an expert on these things, but the R-naught changes, right? So the R-naught is a snapshot in time, and hopefully, just to end on exactly the note we should end on, Lisa, hopefully as people act intelligently and only leave the house when they need to for absolutely essential reasons, that R-naught will come down and we'll start to see the end of this thing.
Absolutely. Congressman Jim Himes, thank you for your service to us and the country, and thank you for being on the show, and please come back on soon.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Take care.